History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. What we've learned is that they don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to take a little initiative, ask a few questions, and invest a little bit of time. Our goal is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Our guest today will soon turn 99 years old in La Mirada, California, where a view of snow atop the San Gabriel Mountains may bring back some memories of some other snow-covered peaks half a world away during World War II, or perhaps the ones Howard Cook trained on in Colorado at what is now one of America's newest national monuments, the Camp Hale Continental Divide National Monument in the Rockies. We'll hear about how Howard became one of the pioneering ski troopers of the 10th Mountain Division, helping to defeat the Axis forces in Italy in World War II, but let's begin, like we usually do, with the early years.
Well, I was born in Oakland, California, on 57th Street and Lowell Avenue, where the Southern Pacific Railroad ran and the Key System local trains ran. I had the house right on the track, just a little north of the tracks. And so we started out there, and I was just a kid, and went to grammar school, and then I started going to junior high school and wound up in high school up at University High School, which was up on Grove Street and 57th Street. So that was how I got my education. My dad bought a house east of the University High School. At the time, I became very interested in skiing, and I had rented some skis to go up to Donner Summit, and one of my friends in high school, Kurt Dreyer's family, had joined Sierra Club, and they were very happy with in Sierra Club and enjoying it. So Kurt encouraged me to join Sierra Club, and I went over to San Francisco and joined the Sierra Club and was very happy to do that, and wound up going up to the Claire Tappan Lodge up at Donner Summit, which was the Sierra Club Lodge up there. And it was right across from the University of California Lodge. They were right on the highway, just going up to Donner, almost to Donner Summit. And the little town, or it was nothing more than a couple of stores, called Norden. And across from Norden was the Sugar Bowl. And of course, I went up first and wound up in the train station, and I went down onto the road and slept out in the snow. And that was my first time sleeping out in the snow. And so the next morning I took my skis and put them on and went into Sugar Bowl and started skiing. I really enjoyed that. And there was a mountain by the name of Mount Disney. And of course, you are aware of Disney. Now Disney's got a lot of things all around the world. And the other mountain up there was Mount Lincoln. And they put chairlifts up both the Disney and Mount Lincoln. And so I started skiing there. There was a gentleman by the name of Wilhelm Klein. Bill Klein had come from the Arlberg in Austria and had the ski school at Sugar Bowl. And so I got to know Bill Klein pretty well because he and his wife, Helen, were living at the Sierra Club. Bill Klein happened to be a very, very good skier, and I loved watching him come down the mountain. And so he taught me to come down the mountain, but I'm not sure I looked as good as Bill Klein, but he was so good.
And how old were you that first time you went skiing?
I was about 13 or 14.
And who made those skis?
I made my, well, first the ski I had to rent from a, outfit down south of Sears Roebuck in Oakland called Dempsey and Kelly. And it was two guys, Dempsey and Kelly, who started this sporting goods store. And so I got attracted to Dempsey and Kelly looking at skis. And so I rented my skis from Dempsey and Kelly the first time. And Dad took me up to University Avenue. At the foot of the University Avenue is the train station that Southern Pacific had. And he put me on the train. I rode up to Norton and got out. I didn't know what to do other than go down to the floor below the station and found a place. But it was in the snow, and my first night out sleeping in the snow. But
little did you know how many nights you'd sleep in the snow in Italy later on, huh? And you ended up making a pair of your own skis in Woodshop in high school?
At Woodshop. And Mr. Reed was a shop instructor. He was a great guy. He knew how to steam his skis, steam them. And you see, the tips of the skis have to be steamed up so you can get through the snow, right? But you also know that the ski has to be steamed up where your foot goes, because there's about a 5/8 or 3/4 inch steamed bend in the ski. And as the ski is about 6'9" or 7-foot ski, and it's where your foot goes is pretty much in the middle. It's a little back in the middle. In order to make the ski work properly, you have to put a bend in the ski so that where the foot is actually is about a 5/8 or 3/4 inch above. And when you put your foot on it, then with your weight, the ski is straight then. And so then you can turn the ski by lifting it to left side or the right side, depending on which way you want to turn. So we had to do that. We had to learn first how to make the ski. And I didn't like to have to pay for the skis, so I made them in high school. And Mr. Reed sure helped me. He was a wonderful guy. First, I didn't put any steel edges on them. I found out that after I took them up the first time, and then the edges started wearing down where they're round and they don't bite into the snow very well anymore. So I had to put steel edges on them. So I went back to Mr. Reed and he showed me how to use a router to make a place for the steel edges of the ski. And I did that with his new skis, so I was ready to go. And I used those skis for quite a long time. Then I went up to Lodge at Sierra Club and met this Georgie Jorgensen, who was managing it. Everybody had to have a job at the Sierra Club. And so I became a pot walloper. And a pot walloper is a guy who cleans all the great big pots they make the food in. Like the mush pot got pretty burned sometimes, and it was pretty tough to clean up inside, so I was doing that. And there were a lot of jobs up there that you could have. Of course, this is during the Depression. I just got started with Sierra Club, and Kurt Dreyer told me to do that, and it worked out beautifully. And I have been members of the Sierra Club for a long, long time now, and I'm 98 years old.
Yeah, there's probably not too many people, if any, that have been a member longer than you.
Possibly. I may be the oldest member of the Sierra Club. I'm not sure. But the Sierra Club people were very nice. And skiing became quite popular in California and other states. Utah, Colorado, Idaho. Beautiful places to ski.
And you mentioned Minnie Dole and the Ski Patrol, but he would be instrumental, I believe, in the formation and training of the 10th Mountain Division, right?
Absolutely. Minnie Dole went down to Washington. He was very interested in the fact that we had to have some kind of a mountain division, because the American Army knew that the Germans had 9 mountain divisions. When Minnie Dole went down to see George Catlett Marshall, who was in charge of the Army, and suggested that we should have a mountain division. I think George Catlett Marshall thought it was a really good idea because he knew that Germany had 9 mountain divisions. So we started the division. They first didn't have anything close to anything that would be a mountain that would be a good place to ski, other than up in Olympia and Tacoma area on the Puget Sound, just below Mount Rainier. And Mount Rainier is about 14,300 elevation, and the only place where you had a camp that was any good was at Fort Lewis. And so they started the 87th Mountain Infantry Regiment at Fort Lewis. They could truck them up to place called Paradise in the Mount Rainier National Park. And Paradise was the place where they started skiing. And of course, when they went up there, the snow was so high and great that they had to climb in the second floor, up to the second floor to get in. So anyway, that was the 87th, started up there. But because Fort Lewis could only handle a regiment, not a full division, they looked for a place in the Rocky Mountains that would be satisfactory for a division, a full division. So they found in Pando, Colorado, which is a little town about 12 to 15 miles north of Leadville, Colorado. They built from April to November. They went up there and built a barracks for 14,000 men, so what you had could carry a division. So that's what I volunteered to go into, because they were advertising for anybody that liked to ski to join the mountain troops. That's what I wanted to do. I volunteered as soon as I could to go into the what they called the ski troops. It was primarily called the ski troops because they didn't have 3 regiments yet. They started with 87th. The next one they installed was 86. So when I went in, I went into the 86th 2nd Battalion Headquarters. That's where I was established. And I had to walk up about 3 miles with this bunch of barracks bag full of clothes that I'd received in Monterey when I went in. And they told me, you're not going to use those clothes. You're going to use our clothes up here. So I had to change my own clothes. So it was an interesting experience for me, just getting on the train and coming up to Camp Hale and getting out at Pando. And there's nothing at Pando. See, there's nothing but a train station there, and nobody's there hardly. Down below me were all these white barracks buildings, and there was enough for 14,000 guys. Everybody from all over the United States was coming to Camp Hale, if they volunteered, of course. Wonderful group of men who loved the outdoors. We had a lot of outdoors up there. A lot of times, we never got to go back to the barracks. We had to stay outside in the snow and learn how to live in the snow. You really learn how to exist in a situation like that when it's winter and cold. My ears are still frozen from Mitchell Creek, which was above where Cooper Hill was. My ears froze there in my sleeping bag. They still don't work really good. The ears themselves outside your head froze. I'm still cogent at 98, and I'm happy for that. I'm just a very happy guy.
This happy guy, Howard Cook, will soon turn 99, but when we come back, we'll take you back to his teenage years, training at Camp Hale, and then heading to Italy with the 10th Mountain Division. You can find photos and a short video with Howard at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 1,800 veterans will have seen their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.